From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
So here we go. It's going to be a big hour. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West over in Texas, Senator Joe Manchin over in West Virginia, and Congressman Darrell Issa standing by. What is the number one story in America? Four straight days of civil unrest in Los Angeles. Yeah, half the city is burned to the ground, and almost nothing's been done to rebuild it. The other half, illegal immigrants, have set off this local officials because ICE is active in rounding up illegal immigrant criminals and others. That has set off the people of the city of Los Angeles to fight back against ICE, not backed up or backed up slowly by the LAPD, forcing the President of the United States to bring in National Guard, and yesterday, 700 Marines. This type of unrest is not going to happen with Trump, too. Listen to Mayor Karen Bass, though. She claims this is a big experiment for President Trump. Cut 7.
These are not the people that we were told were going to be detained. And it makes me feel like our city is actually a test case for what happens when the federal government moves in and takes the authority away from the state.
Is there a more idiotic assessment of a real unfolding dramatic situation than that? Congressman Darrell Issa of California joins us now, Judiciary and Vice Chair of Foreign Affairs. Congressman, your reaction to how the mayor and governor are handling this civil unrest?
Brian, this makes about as much sense as they're telling us that former President Joe Biden was at the top of his game. The fact is that when you're watching cars being burned, when you're watching federal property being destroyed, when you're seeing cinder blocks being thrown at police and they're overwhelmed, and when the police chief himself says he needs the help to go on the air in your sort of outfit as the mayor did, just flies in the face of common sense and reality. But that's where we are. They're willing to say things that just aren't true, knowing that they're not true, as though we're on radio and not on television, because what you see, you can tell what's happening.
So there's organizations that are behind this, the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights, which gets state money and federal money and money from the Chinese, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, and the Service Employee International Union. They're out there organizing to make sure this lasts and try to unbalance the law enforcement. What can we do about that?
Well, the first thing we can do is doge the funding to organizations that work against America. You know, that organization was formed in 86 for a reason. They were suckering Ronald Reagan into the big amnesty that they then made sure there were about four times as many got through the process as were actually here at the time. But having said that, we are doing exactly the right thing. The president is doing what previous presidents, including Eisenhower and LBJ, did in the case of insurrection, lawlessness that cannot be controlled and won't be controlled in this case by our governor. He's sending in federal troops to guard federal installations and activating National Guard to assist the police. That's the combination that anyone with any common sense would do.
You worry about it spreading to San Diego? We've already had something have ICE raid protests in Boston and Dallas yesterday. What about San Diego?
Well, San Diego's had a little bit of it, and some of our local congressmen, including Sarah Jacobs, have been touting, let's celebrate the restaurateur who hired illegals that were taken away, some of whom had pretty significant criminal rap sheets. So I expect that it's going to be that. But, you know, if the president's going to do his job and make good on his promise of even a fraction of the 20 million people that are here illegally, he's going to have to do numbers greater than we're currently doing. And that's why basically the Border Patrol and ICE are gearing up. We're going to provide them additional resources so they can do their job, because, you know, undoing the damage of Joe Biden in 4 years is beyond any historic event.
So what Democrats are saying is now they're going in to go for landscapers, Home Depot workers, people that are needed on farms, instead of going after the 600,000 plus illegal criminals that are here. Do you think it's too wide a net? Do you find there's any validity to that complaint?
Ryan, I'm glad you asked that question, because that's exactly the question that we're delighted to answer. In my sanctuary state, in that sanctuary city of L.A., they will not cooperate even on criminal aliens they're holding in county jails and in lockup. So if they won't turn over the criminals and ICE has to go in looking for them, of course there's going to be collateral arrest. And that's on the sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. There's no question at all. We want to adjudicate the rest of the 20 million, and you know, some will get to stay and some will get to go. But the president's gearing up that process. They're doing a good job of interviewing people, some of whom actually will get to stay in the United States. Remember that what we're dealing with now are people that Joe Biden made legal, even though they entered illegally, and disproportionately they're only going after the people who have been ordered deported, the people who have been previously deported, and the people who have committed crimes and are on want list, and my state and that city will not turn over.
Seth Moulton, Democrat from Massachusetts, says this is exactly what Trump wanted to do, turn the military against the American people. Trump has never respected the Marines, what the Marines do overseas, but has always wanted to use them to force his political agenda at home. Is that the Trump you know?
It's not the Trump I know. It's not the Trump I served for 2 years, left Congress to serve under. And certainly, as someone who represented Camp Pendleton for my entire career, first 18 years nonstop, Camp Pendleton was in my district. Yeah. I was on FOBs for Christmas with the Commandant in Afghanistan. No, look, President Trump, I proudly stood at veterans events with him back in 16 when he was running. He made a real point of it. And he has been a stalwart supporter of the military. As a matter of fact, Brian, the good news is right now, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, they're hitting their enlistment goals right now for the first time in 4 years. And they're hitting them because President Donald Trump has got the military under the secretary back to doing the job, which is being prepared to defend our country. You want to be treated nicely as a soldier? No. You want to be trained to be able to defend our country and not to lose a war, to win at all costs. And that's what President Trump is doing, is he's revitalizing the military. So you want to make a Marine happy? Get a Marine dirty and tired in training and make them ready to win the next time they have to go to war and not come home in a body bag. That's why Donald Trump is popular with the Marines in my district.
I know you got to head to a hearing, but real quick, how does this end? We've had 4 days of this. It looks pretty organized. Is this just going to continue?
Brian, I expect it to be a long, hot summer. I expect there to be organized activities by the Democrats and by their supporters. But I expect the president to stay firm. We're going to have midterm elections in a year and a half. And I want to be able to say to my constituents, I asked the question, paraphrasing Ronald Reagan, are you safer now than you were 2 years ago? And I want the answer to be yes, and so does Donald Trump.
Go get him. Congressman Darrell Issa of California, one of the sane ones out there, and we need more. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. And by the way, served our country, self-made multimillionaire. Senator Joe Manchin coming up next. How's he feel about his party? And where John Fetterman is actually back Trump on this, against his party. I think Manchin would be saying the same thing. We're about to find out. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West afterwards. You're watching The Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I want to share the CBS poll. It shows 54% of Americans approve of the Trump administration's program to deport illegal immigrants. A minority, 46%, disapprove. Are Democrats out of touch on this issue?
Well, I think if you did the polling in Los Angeles, I'm not sure it would be that way, considering we are a city of immigrants. And then people might approve that policy, but do people really approve the federal government coming in and seizing power from a state and from a city? So I drill down a little further on that poll, because I do not believe that Americans support the federal intervention in a city takeover or a state takeover.
Just an embarrassing mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, weighing in on a poll that was done on, they just asked the poll about what they should be doing and who backs who. And guess what? She loses. According to a CBS poll, 54% of the country agree with President Trump's deportation policy. And the unrest happened and the national troops are there because local authorities couldn't control it. How does Senator Joe Manchin feel about it? He went independent at the end, but spent the majority of his career as a Democrat. And he's kind enough to join us from West Virginia. Senator, great to see you. Your reaction from what we're all seeing over the last 4 days and what the mayor said.
It's a shame. And it's disgusting. The bottom line is Americans want a secure border. And Democrats just ought to say, we made a mistake. I'm so sorry we made a mistake. We're going to support securing our borders. And we would like for the president and all of our Republican friends to work together as Democrats, as Americans, and find a legal immigration policy that people want to come for the right reason and be able to add to this great country of ours and economies. We're all a nation of immigrants. But we came here and our families and my grandparents came here for the right purpose and the right reason and be productive. And we need to get back to that. But this is awful. We should have never opened the borders up. It has never been asylum at the border. They know that they were wrong and made a big mistake. The problem with the political posturing today, people can't say, I made a mistake. I messed up. I'm sorry. And I'll fix it. Let's fix it. And that's what they need to do.
What about the fact that ICE is not protected or communicating with local police? It doesn't happen in West Virginia. But in these sanctuary cities, there's no communication, and that leads to lack of coordination and leads to the destruction of property and could be leading to death and destruction shortly. This can't exist. This sanctuary thing is not American. How do you handle that? Because most of your party is for it.
What happens, in the riots way back in, I remember the riots in 1960s, Vietnam War, and they started all over the country, but started in major cities, and they spread like wildfire, unfortunately, and a lot of destruction and death was happened during that period of time. We never want to go back to that. So I'm just saying, first of all, law enforcement, judicial process that we have in our country, and rule of law, is for everybody. And the federal government takes the lead on that. I'm a believer of the 10th Amendment, which is states' rights, the Constitution, and basically being a former governor, I understand that. But there's times when you need a show of force. And that shows when the local and the federal government join hands. We will not tolerate this. And this is going to be done and taken care of immediately.
Do you think the president did the right thing sending in the National Guard and didn't check with Governor Newsom first? He felt as though he was totally ineffective and just did it. How do you feel about that?
As a former governor, I never had anybody ever do that to me. They've always contacted me. When you have the hurricanes and all that, and you needed assistance from my National Guard, I was always contacted and say, what can you do? Can you give us the support that needs to be done? I would have liked to have seen the president follow that. His staff should have told him, we're going to reach out to the governor and the governor's office, see if he's receptive, he understands how dire this is, and we're willing to act, and we will act if he doesn't act. That would have been, I think, a little bit more smoother way to do it. Public would have seen he tried everything possible. They didn't want to enforce the law the way it should be enforced, and the president had to do it. But they could have made that gesture.
Senator Fetterman says this: I unapologetically stand for free speech, peaceful demonstrations, immigration, but this is not that. This is anarchy and true chaos. My party loses the moral high ground when we refuse to condemn setting cars on fire, destroying buildings, and assaulting law enforcement. Do you agree with him?
I agree with that. And of course, you're going to have the Democrats come back around and said on January 6th, the same thing happened. So bottom line is, we've got to put a stop to it. The federal government, the president's a leader. He's our president. He's a leader of the free world. He has to show how we can work together, make an effort to try to work together, and then move forward and take the force and use the force that's needed. It's a shame the Democrats cannot come to grips.
Right.
They missed in so many different arenas and issues. And I've said this, the big thing about happening now, the border and the crackdown on crime is what the Americans people have been dying for and requesting and asking for all over the country. So they're going to support aggressive measures. They're going to support basically the federal government and doing what's being done, even though there could be an effort of trying to say, can we work together? But if not, the American people will support this crackdown because they've seen a lack of enforcement for a long period of time, and they're not going to go back to that.
Are you shocked that Governor Newsom hasn't condemned the crime, come out aggressively against the looters and the cars and these robo-taxis that have been exploded?
I can't speak for the governor or his thought process on this or the I just cannot believe that a majority of Californians believe that this is an overreach. I can't believe that they think that basically we can take care of it ourselves and everything's fine. They've seen what happens when you don't move and move quickly. They're seeing the force of that now, and they're seeing basically that there will be this will come to an end. There will be peace. This will shut down, but it'd be better if the federal government and the state government says, okay, we're in this together. Right. We're going to shut this down. There's no way we're tolerating that, and then move forward. But if they can't come to grips, then the federal government's got to say, wait a minute, you might be in my city next. You might be in Chicago. You might be in New York. You might be in Pittsburgh, close to my hometown. So we're not going to let that happen.
Right. I mean, you saw what happened in Kenosha. You saw what happened in Seattle and Portland. The president's not going to tolerate this term. Senator, everyone's talking about Joe Biden and was he really making those decisions. You told us that he was a moderate when you knew him, and you were shocked at who he chose to staff his cabinet with. Do you believe that he was making his decisions, or was the whoever worked in the auto pen making the decisions in the last couple of years of the Biden administration or all 4 years?
Well, I always had a great relationship with Joe Biden for many, many years, and he was always a centrist, moderate, center left, more so than me, but still someone you could work with, make a deal, and move forward. I just thought he lost the will to fight, and I think that basically he had a very aggressive and a very liberal chief of staff and moving his whole regime further to the left and just lost the will to fight. That's all I believe. I had cognitive conversations with him when we met, but with that, I didn't see the will to fight. That's what I missed that. And I think that his very liberal staff took over and moved from further left.
When you watched him walk and you watched him talk, did you think he was all there?
Well, it was challenging. Age was tough. You cannot run mother time. You're just not going to do it. And it was tough. And it was a struggle. Let's put it that way. And I was concerned about that too. We all were. But people asked me, well, you met with him many times. I did. And I always had a lucid conversation. But I did not see the fire in the belly to basically say, I'm going to make my staff do this, 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 this. I think the staff took advantage and saw something different than what some of us saw. So I'm not saying that I'm not hiding anything or covering up. I just think the president lost that will to fight. And when you lose the will to fight and making sure that your administration or basically your staff follows through on what you order them to do and you follow up on they don't and you reprimand them, you know, things got to happen there. But when they don't think anyone's.
Senator, real quick, we only have 20 seconds, but do you think lost the will or lost the ability to? Was he just not there in the end?
I don't want to think that, but it was very challenging. I can tell you, all of us were shocked, very, very shocked when we saw the debate. That basically said everything that needed to be said.
Gotcha.
It was time to be worried about the president's health more so than anything
else. We miss you in Washington, Senator. Thanks so much.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Donald Trump and the extreme MAGA Republicans are intentionally trying to inflame. They should be ashamed of themselves.
It's hard to imagine that this time the National Guard were sent out to attack protesters that were exercising their constitutional obligation.
We don't take lightly to the president abusing his authority and unlawfully mobilizing California National Guard troops.
They're not criminals, and that is the outrage that you're seeing. And I think that if ICE left, I think if the National Guard left, you would see this all die down.
That is not true. I don't see it that way. Hakeem Jeffries, Jay Appel, another a California attorney, and then Congresswoman Annette Barragan says that they're not criminals. Yeah, a lot of them are criminals, and they're backing up criminals. What is your problem? Did you see the police blotter of the ICE arrests? They're picking up illegal immigrant criminals. And if they're hanging out with other illegals, they're scooped up too. Part of the reason, you heard the explanation, that if you do not cooperate, local police does not cooperate with ICE, they're going to go in there on their own without proper backing and without maybe the thorough targeted arrest. And they're going to see other people in that room and they're going to get scooped up too. So you're going for the dad, the whole family's there, the whole family's gone. That's the way it's going to be. And we watched 4 days of unrest because ICE was doing what it's supposed to be. And these idiots that keep saying, why does ICE cover their face? Because they should be proud of what they're doing, but they're not. That's why they're covered up. They're covered up because they get doxxed and their families get targeted. Why? Hakeem Jeffries can't be as stupid as that. But he says the same thing almost every day. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now. Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, former congressman from the 22nd District in Florida. But now there was a little bit of unrest in Dallas yesterday, Colonel.
Yeah, it's happening here. It's happening all across the country. You know that they have these protests, quote unquote. I call this, it is an insurrection based upon the definition from the left when you attack law enforcement and federal buildings. But they're planning on that on the 250th Army birthday this Saturday, June 14th. But, you know, Brian, I just got back from a sacred and hallowed place, and that is Normandy. I was there this past week, and of course, on June the 6th of 1944, 81 years ago, we know of the acts of courage and heroism and bravery. But think about what happens 81 years later on June the 6th here in the United States of America. People took to the streets supporting criminal illegal immigrants. We have, such as the voices that you played, quote-unquote elected representatives standing on the side of people who have violated our laws, violated our national sovereignty. It was just Memorial Day weekend here in Lake Grapevine in North Texas. We had an Air Force Academy cadet who was killed by a criminal illegal immigrant. She was run over by a jet ski while she was out kayaking on Lake Grapevine. These are the type of things that are happening that I don't understand how the members of the Democrat Party, the left, can stand and support this. And this is, like you said, the result of sanctuary city, sanctuary state policies. ICE has to go in there and remove these people who are heinous individuals. Number one, violated our sovereignty. Number two, committing incredible acts of violence and crime against legal law-abiding citizens. How can you support that?
Well, they are. And that's they're saying that they've made it worse. Trump bringing in the National Guard incited everything, and bringing ICE in caused it. Listen to Karen Bass, the inept mayor from Los Angeles. Cut seven.
These are not the people that we were told were going to be detained. And it makes me feel like our city is actually a test case for what happens when the federal government moves in and takes the authority away from the state or away from local government. I don't think that our city should be used for an experiment to see what happens in the nation's second largest city. Well, maybe we can do this to other cities.
What do you say to that?
Well, obviously, she's delusional, and she's someone that I served in Congress with, and I can't believe that she actually got elected to that position. But she doesn't understand the Constitution. The Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, Article 6, Section 1, it clearly states that when the federal government is acting in pursuance thereof, of the rule of law, of the Constitution, then they have supremacy over those states and local municipalities or anyone else. And so where was Karen Bass when Joe Biden was violating the Constitution and allowing all of these criminal illegal immigrants into our country, single military age male, non-state, non-uniform belligerents into our country? Now, all of a sudden, we have someone that's trying to abide by the Constitution and remove these individuals who are criminals out of our states and our cities. Now she wants to complain about it along with these activist judges. So again, this is about the left's ideological agenda. Open borders is more important to them than the safety and security of the American people.
She does not pick up that Friday was happening because ICE was doing their job. And the LAPD took 35 minutes to respond to an urgent call saying they were being overwhelmed. And the president's not going to take any chances anymore. After Portland, Seattle, Kenosha, Wisconsin, some of the stuff he was told, don't go heavy into these cities, you'll make it worse. And maybe he did the first time. He is not waiting. How do you feel about 700 Marines in Los Angeles?
Well, I would I have a little bit of, trepidation about using active duty troops to come onto the streets of the United States of America because of the Posse Comitatus Act. We don't want to have active duty troops taking any actions against who could be citizens of the United States of America. But without a doubt, that's why you have the ability of the president to federalize National Guard, to have them come in and back up federal law enforcement, which is exactly what they're doing there in California and what they need to do in other jurisdictions if you do not have that support. One of the things that the American Constitutional Rights Union we're doing is we're going around and supporting those sheriffs that are acting under the 287G program to support ICE and to go out there and back up ICE in these jurisdictions to make sure that they are removing these criminal illegal immigrants. And I think that every single sheriff's office across the country, they're supposed to be constitutionally elected constitutional officers. That's what they're supposed to do, not be activists and not being ideologues, which we see some of these law enforcement agencies are.
One of these groups, the Coalition for Humane Rights, Humane Immigrant Rights, is ties to China and gets state money and federal money. Why are we putting out the Party for Socialism and Liberation also at the scene? One of the quotes was, we need to make sure this empire, once and for all, dissolves. Then they went ahead and slammed and took all the everything out of a Foot Locker. And then they took everything out of a T-Mobile, looted it. They destroyed it. But guess what? Almost all these businesses are run or owned by Hispanics. And most of the people in South and Central America that are there illegally are Hispanic. Do they understand what they're doing?
I don't think they understand what they're doing, but what they know that they're doing is siding with their ideological agenda. Again, when you look at these groups, first and foremost, we should find out who the leaders are, find out where they are being financed, and we should cut off the resources thereof. Someone is paying for all of this to happen. When you look at this website that is up that's promoting these protests on June the 14th, the Army birthday, 250 years, and also Flag Day, it's appalling to me that leftists want to get out and, you know, protest, really, like I said, commit acts of insurrection against this country. But go back to President Trump's first administration. Remember, they took to the streets in Washington, D.C., and they were shouting, no borders, no walls, no USA at all. So that's the goal of the progressive socialist left, these Marxists that are taken to the streets.
So we watched the president very sure just to put in 2,000 National Guard troops and said Marines stand by, and now he's putting Marines in. He's very definitive, very sure of himself. But that's not how Rachel Maddow thinks. Cut 13.
We have never seen a president less politically skilled, less politically equipped than this one to turn that kind of problem around. And so he has panicked. He is trying to hit the eject button. Somebody convinced this president that attacking immigrants would work for him politically. He has no idea what to do with the sustained and growing and intractable and indomitable protest and opposition of the American people against him. And so he has decided to try to fix it by using the army. Sure. Game over, big guy. You lose.
I understand left-wing and right-wing perspectives, but that is so unfounded and ridiculous. Out of all the takes, I can't imagine a stupider one.
No, you're absolutely right. And to think that she's Oxford educated, someone needs to get a refund. But going back to what she just said, these people out there in the streets, they're not waving American flags. They're waving flags from other countries. So this is not representative of the American people. And again, what she is talking about really does fuel what is going on. She's talking about immigrants. We're not talking about immigrants. We're talking about criminal, illegal immigrants. We're talking about single military age males. We're talking about others, murderers, rapists, child predators, all of these different type of things that we want off the streets. But I guess, once again, that it's fine for her. I suppose that she feels that she's insulated away from that. This is such a losing proposition for the left, and it's sad that you have people that are tuning in, listening to this, and they're so detached from reality and what is actually happening in this country. But they're setting themselves up for another bloodbath at the polls next November for the midterm elections, and then 2 years after that, the next presidential election, because they have aligned themselves with criminality. They have aligned themselves with illegal immigration. They have aligned themselves with the enemies of the United States.
I just don't know. I keep hearing about the push to moderate. Wes Moore is a moderate now, and Pete Buttigieg is going to grow a beard and take his pronouns down. And then Rahm Emanuel, enough with wokeism. But where's one of them with the courage that Fetterman showed by saying that it's wrong and condemning the violence? Not one has a chance to actually show us what they'd be like as a leader, instead of telling us what they might do as on a podcast.
Yeah, and they're not going to say anything about it because the base of the quote-unquote Democrat Party is a socialist, leftist, Marxist base. And you're not going to be able to win a nomination of that party unless you kowtow to them. They're the most extreme. I know that Hakeem Jeffries keeps wanting to say MAGA extremists. You know, the more you say it does not make it any truth, using Goebbels' line. But they cannot win unless they kowtow to that side. And you already see how they're turning against John Fetterman, who, for whatever reason, has come out of Walter Reed and found common sense.
Right. They're trying to destroy him. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Colonel Alan West.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
All right. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I was in Los Angeles over the weekend getting a BBL from a celebrity doctor. And quick question, for those of you who live in that area, is your city ever not on fire? Whether you win a basketball championship, a World Series championship, whether you have an exploding pinata gender reveal gone wrong, congratulations, it's a boy and an evacuation, or you're just protesting the Trump administration's expanded deportation raids, L.A. continues to be our most flammable city.
Right, and it's on fire right now for four straight days, and they continue to do it and defile. Do you see some of the tagging, some of the vile words they wrote, and see how they're treating some of the cops and law enforcement? I don't think the average American is going to tolerate it. Democrat, you might be a cop. If you're a cop or have served before, a family member served, and you see them spitting in the face, or do you see the guy sitting on the side of the road just throwing rock after the ICE vehicle or cop vehicle that's blazing down the street? We saw it. The guys are going to be arrested. Well, you ask yourself, what side are you on that? Is there any doubt where you'd stand? Also, Kristi Noem weighed in yesterday. She thinks this whole thing's got a script. Cut five.
These are organized. These are people that are being paid to do this. You can follow how they behave, the signals they give to each other in these crowds and these protests to instigate violence. This is an operation, and it's professionally done. They've done it before, and we're going to stop it and make sure that we prosecute every single one of them.
How embarrassing is the governor just holed up and is just sitting there telling people, arrest me, and being flamboyant and theatrical and taking on Trump. You're not doing anything. Go fix your city. I mean, this guy has a chance. He wants to be president. He has a chance to go ahead and show people what kind of leader, what a leader would do or what he would do. And what does he do? Blame? Say, Los Angeles ran out of water and it burned to the ground. Yeah, I got to get to the bottom of that. Really? Aren't you the governor? And now, well, let's look at Los Angeles on fire, some four straight days of riots. Well, President Trump made it worse. That's leadership. So let's talk about Trump and Elon Musk. Was the number one story until L.A. went up in flames. And that looks like, to a degree, I think things are getting better. Clearly, Musk wants to mend fences. Here's President Trump yesterday off Peter Ducey's question. Got 21.
There was this New York Times 25. Report that he did not want to talk about, Elon Musk, that alleged that he, towards the end of his time in the White House, was blurring the lines between recreational use of drugs and medicinal. Do you think he ever had drugs here at the White House?
I really don't know. I don't think so. I hope not. Look, I wish him well. You understand. We had a good relationship, and I just wish him well. Very well, actually.
So then Elon Musk put that quote in, was up on X, and President Trump said, President Trump on Elon Musk, we had a great relationship, and I wish him well, very well, actually. And he put a thumbs up on that or a smiley on that. So he commented on that, put an emoji on that. And I think they're getting there. Then when on Fox News Digital reported that the public spat between the two billionaires appeared to be loosening up. Why? Well, Governor Gavin Newsom and Mayor Bass should apologize to the people of Los Angeles, with President Trump put on social media. Absolutely horrible job that they have done. And it now includes the ongoing L.A. riots. These are not protests. They are troublemakers and insurrectionists. And he gave that a big thumbs up. This moment calls for decisive leadership, Vance said, calling it a and then shared a screenshot of President Trump about how his administration would address the riots. Is the president will not tolerate rioting and violence. So what's so big deal about J.D. Vance saying that about the president? Not really. But when that's not a big deal. But Musk also reposted it of Vance doing what he did. So clearly he's looking to bridge gaps. There's no way he works his way back in. But when you have Starlink and SpaceX and you got robots, Tesla robots about to roll out, it doesn't do anybody any good to sideline that type of genius. What he's got to do is he is incapable of understanding government because it just demands nonstop cooperation. I guess somehow you have to give in a little and get a little. Instead of just decisive, this is my company, this is what I'm doing. And even when he goes public, he doesn't like his board. Sometimes he threatens to go private. He just is not built for government. Here's more on Trump. And this is the story that came out over the weekend, not denied by anybody, but real quick about Scott Bessent and Elon Musk getting in a verbal fight and then getting physical in the hallway of the White House. Cut 27.
Did you ever see Elon Musk get physical with the Treasury Secretary?
No, I didn't.
And I tried to
they
ask...
They did have an argument, but I didn't see I didn't see a lot of physicality there.
Evidently, he put his shoulder into Bessent, and Bessent pushed him back. And then Bessent said, you're a fraud. You were supposed to save $2 trillion. You only saved, what, $150 billion? What have you been doing? So, and then they since said nice things about each other. But that's just not the way the White House works. He's not built for this type of environment. What can you do? But it doesn't mean they got to be enemies or you got to doubt his genius. And unlike Democrats, because he doesn't like you, it doesn't mean you don't salute him for what he's done. Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out how to see me in Dayton next Saturday night.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the show. I come to you from New York City, where I look outside. It looks like it's dark. It looks like night. I assume that means rain's coming. Stuart Varney will do a simulcast at 45 after. I'm doing Outnumbered today. She'll see me at noon. Molly Hemingway's in studio, Fox News contributor, editor-in-chief of The Federalist. We have a lot going on. Right now, the Secretary of Defense is testifying, along with the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I know he's going to want to talk about the $1 trillion budget and how to spend it. You know what they're going to want to talk about? The Signal app and who did what and where, as well as the 700 Marines lined up in Los Angeles. So before we get to Molly, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
And President Trump, being President Trump and a New Yorker, basically said, I want to meet again, you know, in the next few days, and I want a handshake that you promise you're going to release these things. And so really, the purpose of the meeting today is to make sure that they're serious.
Trust and expect them to cheat, but get the China trade deal done as top U.S. and China officials start day two of the intense talks over in London. Why China might need this deal more than us, I'll explain.
Number two.
On Elon Musk, do you plan to speak to him on the phone anytime soon?
I haven't really thought about it, actually. I would imagine he wants to speak to me. I would think so. If I were him, I'd want to speak to me.
Musk versus Trump, the Cold War begins to thaw, defrost, what's happening, and where I see the Titan battle going.
Number one.
Are Democrats out of touch on this issue?
Well, I think if you did the polling in Los Angeles, I'm not sure it would be that way, considering we are a city of immigrants. But do people really approve the federal government coming in and seizing power?
Maybe. L.A. riots. Day four and counting, as Marines are about to join the National Guard and some L.A. cops to suppress the organized violence versus ICE and government officials. Your choice. Side with the law or an order or the left-wing illegal immigrant anarchy. And let's see what works. Remember, there was a school of thought early on I guess, the Mitt Romney era, when if you were hard on the border and talked about cracking down on immigrants, people would say, wow, that's a turnoff to Hispanics. That ship has sailed. Am I right, Molly Hemingway?
Oh, completely true. What we're dealing with in the last decade of just massive immigration, illegal immigration and legal immigration, but the illegal immigration in particular, where you have so many bad effects on communities throughout the country, it just is. People are anxious for serious action to be taken to return the country to the citizens.
So if you look at it, 54%, a CBS poll, 54% of for President Trump's deportation policies, 54%, which is amazing in this polarized environment.
Well, and perhaps more importantly, it's like 86% of Republicans and, again, like 54% of independents. Among Democrats, however, it's very small. And so you're seeing a massive divide on an issue that politically goes to Republicans' favor. People want rule of law. I heard you play that clip where someone said, we are a nation of immigrants. And that's not actually the right way to say it. We're a nation of citizens. We are American citizens. First rule of citizenship is following the rule of law. And so when you say, oh, we're actually a nation of immigrants, meaning by that person, illegal immigrants, that's just not true. That's not who we are. And that's not who Americans want us to be.
All right. So here's what Karen Bass said, the mayor of New York, says basically we're arresting or detaining too many people. Cut seven.
These are not the people that we were told were going to be detained. And it makes me feel like our city is actually a test case for what happens when the federal government moves in and takes the authority away from the state or away from local government. I don't think that our city should be used for an experiment to see what happens in the nation's second largest city. Well, maybe we can do this to other cities.
I don't even know what she's talking about, but she thinks as though instead of going after criminals, she thinks they're going after too many other illegal immigrants.
Well, what's interesting is these riots actually began not in response to a traditional raid on criminal illegal aliens, but actually high target people who are about to be charged, according to Tom Homan in an interview this week, with being part of the cartel control of our southern border. So they were working to make action against the Mexican cartels for criminal conspiracy. So she's kind of right that this isn't traditional. But what does it say that when they started going after the cartels is when these riots started happening? And again, that's the kind of thing you're going to need to do if you truly want to take control of our southern border, is to kind of go to war against these Mexican cartels that currently control
it. And you know what the message, Molly, is? Oh, yeah. Well, they're going after the handyman hanging out at Home Depot on a split rail fence looking to work for $20 a day.
Well, first off, I think that messaging point from Democrats isn't even as strong as they think it is. It's true that the Trump administration is going after the worst criminals, the rapists, the murderers first. But actually, everyone who breaks the law has broken the law. And a lot of Americans understand that the millions of people here, doesn't mean all of them are murderers or rapists, but anyone who breaks the law violates the civil contract that makes our society cohesive. And so it's not as, you know, sympathetic, I think, as Democrats want to make it.
So there was some unrest in Dallas and Boston yesterday. Do you fear or do you feel as though it could happen in a place like where we're in now in New York, in D.C.?
I think it's important that people recognize that these riots are in fact organized and they are intended to break out nationwide by this weekend. So people should expect riots nationwide by this weekend. It's a little bit different than the organized BLM riots of 2020, in which people were a little less prepared for it. But now people kind of understand that the left has this overarching organizational structure with funding, with game plans. And so they have said they would like the riots to go nationwide. And so I would be surprised if they didn't.
So in New York, Mayor Adams says he's ready. Cut 10.
I understand that some New Yorkers may be angry, afraid, and ready to express that. New York City will always be a place to peacefully protest, but we will not allow violence and lawlessness. The escalation of protests in Los Angeles over the last couple of days is unacceptable and will not be tolerated if attempted in our city.
But really, I mean, if there's still no cooperation between ICE and the NYPD, technically, do you take him at his word, or could you see it happening here?
It's just interesting that he's even speaking this way. I don't know. It'll be saying things is one thing, and actually behaving as if you take violent riots seriously is entirely another. Now, again, during previous protest movements, one of the things that kind of worked in in the activists' favor is that they would have a large number of peaceful protesters who kind of stood between the police and the violent rioters and worked as a shield. I don't know if you're going to see as much of that. I think that's what the left is trying to gin up right now is that kind of thing that protects some of the violent people from being held accountable. But again, it is a completely different world. People saw what happened in 2020 when there were arson and looting and murders, all associated with the violence of the extreme part of the BLM riots. And I don't think they're as favorable toward that now, particularly because the issue itself is one where a large percentage of Americans say we need to do something to get control of having a country run by citizens and not illegals.
What do you think President Trump took out of his first term that plays into how quick he actually got the National Guard in term this time?
Well, we know from multiple reporting that he actually wanted to crack down on the rioters during the BLM riots. It was a very politically dangerous time for him. It's at the height of COVID. Already he's being attacked on all sides. And so he kind of held back. And he was also told that to do that would hurt him politically. I think he realized that he should have been much stronger against the worst parts of those riots, that it in fact led to not just his election loss, but maybe some of the response of his own supporters in the early part of the next year, thinking that they would not be held accountable for the riots that they saw the left engage in nationwide. And it was just a big mess. So I think he's much more inclined to restore rule of law and law and order.
The one thing I'd say, he's definitely sure of himself. This is the decision he wanted to make. It doesn't look like he's wrestling with it. But Rachel Maddow, even if you don't agree, I never really question her intelligence. I've never seen somebody with a worse take. Cut 13.
We have never seen a president less politically skilled, less politically equipped than this one to turn that kind of problem around. And so he has panicked. He is trying to hit the eject button. Somebody convinced this president that attacking immigrants would work for him politically. He has no idea what to do with the sustained and growing and intractable and indomitable protest and opposition of the American people against him. And so he has decided to try to fix it by using the army. Sure. Game over, big guy. You lose.
What do I say to that?
Okay. Again, this is an indication that she really needs to talk to more people. So when Trump was elected in 2016, even before he was inaugurated, you did see large American protest movements on behalf of illegal immigrants. They were taking over airports. It was very well organized. And it was real. That is not what we're dealing with now. We have had, since 2016, how many millions of people being welcomed to break the law, coming over the border illegally or staying in the country illegally, and Americans have had enough. So it's just not the same environment. Like, it might be in the studio at MSNBC, but it's not in the rest of the country.
Right. At the very least, even listen to a podcast. Here is that's not hers. Here is Howard Enten. He's the flamboyant pollster on CNN. Cut 20.
If we just take a look at the baseline numbers here, this is Trump's net approval rating on immigration. It's gone up like a rocket. In his first term, Trump was way, way, way underwater at minus 21 points. But look at this. He's up over 20 points. Now, in the aggregate, he is in positive territory at plus 1 point on his net approval rating. Some other polls even have it a little bit higher than that. While Trump's administration's program to deport those here illegally. Look at this, 54% approval. How about agents searching your hometown for those that they think are here illegally? Again, positive territory here, above 50% for Donald Trump. No matter what poll you look at, no matter which way you cut it, the American public is with the Republicans. The American public is with Donald Trump.
What do you say to that? A CNN pollster. Does she even get CNN in her office? I mean, did you just don't even put on Fox. Just look at that.
Or just look at the last CBS. Election where we saw polling that indicated this was a big issue. Yeah. It's also been a big issue for Americans for a long time on both left and right. You take people like Bernie Sanders, who tapped into this for a long time until Trump, people already weren't as keen on rampant immigration, particularly illegal, as many of our elites were. But now that you have, I saw a recent analysis showing that 1 in 4 public school students might be here as part of an illegal family, you're seeing greater expense, whether it's at hospitals, schools, in traffic court, everywhere. People think that we have been more than generous, and that particularly when it comes to illegal immigration, enough is enough.
Who's paying for this? Who's paying for the robo-taxis that are no longer going to be affordable and convenient to come to your house? Who's paying for the Hispanic businesses that have been defiled and looted in the case of the Verizon store or the Dress Factory or Foot Locker that was just looted? So most of them are Hispanic-run or Hispanic-owned businesses. Use your head. When we come back, I want to talk to Molly about what's going on with Elon Musk and the President of the United States, also the big, beautiful bill. Does this help or hurt it? Because there's huge provisions for more money for ICE and more money for the wall and immigration enforcement. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
There was this New York Times report that he did not want to talk about, Elon Musk, that alleged that he, towards the end of his time in the White House, was blurring the lines between recreational use of drugs and medicinal. Do you think he ever had drugs here at the White House?
I really don't know. I don't think so. I hope not. Look, I wish him well. You understand. We had a good relationship, and I just wish him well. Very well, actually.
And that is President Trump. And then that was retweeted in some type of emoji for from Musk afterwards. And there's been almost no contention coming from us, negativity coming from us since the meltdown. With me right now is Molly Hemingway. A few more minutes. Fox News contributor. She's also with the Federalist. Molly, where do you think this is heading?
I think that they will probably continue to have a fine relationship. Meaning everything was crazy last week. Yes. Clearly, Elon was very distraught over his time working in the government. It was to be expected. This is a man who, you know, say what you want about him. He has a lot of personal demons. He has a lot of problems. He's also just an amazing man. He's built all these major businesses. And he's done it in part by just seeing a problem and solving the problem. So he gets to the government and he sees, oh, wow, we have all of this horrific waste, fraud, abuse, and we could easily fix it. And he's thinking that the problem was that people didn't know about it. And then he realizes, oh, actually, Washington, D.C. exists to perpetuate waste, fraud, abuse, inefficiency. And it kind of broke him for a bit. Now, presumably he'll come out of it on the other side or just return his focus to his private businesses. But I think a lot of people like him, again, despite his many, many faults, which are real. And they wish him well.
Right. How much of the negativity did he absorb for Trump?
Oh. It's actually, I think this is so interesting. We saw with these riots and with the media right now, they have returned to full force anti-Trumpism. And it made you realize, oh, Elon was absorbing so much of that for the early part of the presidency. And now that he's gone, they've just returned to sort of their first term style. And you remember just how difficult it is and how vicious and awful they can be.
Right. Here's a little more from Trump. Will they speak again? That was one thing that he was asked. Cut 26.
On Elon Musk, do you plan to speak to him on the phone anytime soon?
I haven't really thought about it, actually. I would imagine he wants to speak to me. I would think so. If I were him, I'd want to speak to me. And maybe he's already called. You'd have to ask him whether or not he's already called. But I'd have no problem with it.
What does that mean? He probably already called.
No, well, I actually think what he's saying is true there. And what I mean by that is most men in Washington, D.C. are very girly. They're very passive aggressive. If someone slights them, they make a vow in their mind that it might take them 20 years, but they're going to destroy that person. And Trump can be very petty and childish publicly. But if someone, he can easily bury the hatchet. So he's just more extreme and it's all on display. And I think Elon Musk is also that way. And so I don't know if it's his autistic sensibilities or whatever, but I could see them bearing the hatchet and moving forward. I think Trump just wanted to make sure Elon knew that his temper tantrum wasn't going to go well for him.
But I mean, the thing is, I predicted that he'd go, my stay in the government has not been fruitful. People haven't been responsive, but allow Trump to say, well, that's his problem. But when he got personal with he should be impeached and the Epstein file, I go, what? I mean, you couldn't be more destructive of a relationship, I don't think, except for maybe he said something about Melania.
Okay, yes, but that's exactly the kind of thing that Trump would do when we were talking about the childish, like petty, ridiculous public insults. It didn't make any sense. He seemed to be juvenile, emotional outbursts. I don't think anyone who knows Elon would look at that and say that man's in a right place right now. And so I just don't think it's going to have long-term damage.
Let's talk about some of the substance. We're in round two of the China talks. It seems to be an adult conversation. I don't trust them. I think there's a lot on the line. We've had three possible terror attacks, people taking over poisonous fungus or whatever happened to happen. We know about the problems with the colleges and the Chinese presence there. Your thought, and the Chinese spy we just caught working for North Korea, trying to keep up with that. What do you think is going to emerge from London?
Well, it does seem like these talks are going well, but even if they go really well, this is just part of a very long process to restrain China, which is, as you know, is a serious adversary. I noticed that they said originally they were only going to be talking for a couple hours today. Then they said, oh, it's actually going to go on all day. I think that's a good sign. I think the fact that they're at the table is a great sign. So much needs to be done, though. It's not just about China's tariffs. It's also about their horrific unfair trade practices and how much they're manipulating things in the global economy. So much to do.
Right. Get the EU on board, that would certainly be formidable. And it looks like we're in a five-year low in terms of a trade relationship. Molly, great to see you again. Good luck with the story you're working on, but I can't say anything yet.
Yep, thanks.
All right, hey, when we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Everything that's happened in the last 7 days between the fight with Elon Musk and now the deployment of the National Guard is probably also a distraction from the main story, which is that right now Donald Trump is trying to pass probably the most unpopular piece of legislation that he will attempt to move through Congress in his first term. He's going to throw 15 million people off their health care in order to fund a massive tax cut for the wealthy. It's going to add $2 trillion to our deficit. We're probably going to head into a recession. And so I do also think he's probably doing everything he can to try to get the entire political world to be talking about anything other than a piece of legislation that's going to fundamentally change this country.
I think you're wrong. And Senator Murphy, again, is wrong. Number one, when they say tax cut for billionaires, please don't listen to that. Nobody's getting it. This is the tax system that they put in play in 2017 that needs to be renewed, or it's going to have taxes go up for everyone. Big story today. I think it was Playbook that said Democrats will tell you that they would be for the current tax structure. They just don't want the other stuff. And if it was broken up into two bills, they might vote for the one with the taxes on it. Number two, just because Trump is a billionaire and Musk is a billionaire when he was there, don't think it, I know it's easy to go, okay, rich people, tax break, he has rich friends. It's not. And keep in mind, he was the one to do something conservatives have never done. He said, you know what, why don't we just put, if you want to come up with revenue, in order to get taxes on tips and taxes on Social Security and on whatever you take it off, why don't we raise the rate in the highest bracket? So Senator Murphy doesn't know what he's talking about, or knows, which is worse, what he's talking about. It's not that it's unpopular. It's that there's so much in it. There's something for everyone, and there's something to dislike for everyone. But what they did is the House has such a diverse caucus. Speaker Johnson said, I got no choice. We have to put it all into one, because if I break it up, I'm going to lose half. And if I break it up one way, I'm going to lose half, and I'm going to lose the other one. I'm not going to be able to get both bills done. I have to do it in one bill. And ultimately, he won over with President Trump. So it's not that it's unpopular. It's not that he's looking for a distraction. Donald Trump or anybody, including Bill Clinton or George Bush, if Joe Biden wasn't in charge, nobody puts National Guard into a city to distract from a piece of legislation. And nobody cares about the Elon Musk Trump thing. Was not a negative for Trump. 76% of people sided with Trump on that. He's not looking to distract from that. That, if anything, was a distraction. What he wants to talk about that bill all day, and he will, because the more they talk about it, the more positive comes out about it. Right now, 1,000 pages adds to the deficit. Tax break for billionaires. That's all you hear instead of actually what's in it. And it's not going to cause a recession. By the way, even the trade situation with everything in limbo, that has not caused a recession. The numbers have improved each and every week. Unemployment's at 4.2%. The GDP is growing faster than anybody thought. I'm just telling you what the markets responded to. Don't even go by what I think, what I believe. Just go by what the numbers say. The market's up again today, 26 points. So we couldn't be further enough from a recession. But there's more going on than just Musk, more going on than the L.A. riots. I want to talk about what's happening in China. And I do think, as Molly mentioned, they are making some progress. Here's what Trump said. Cut 28.
We are doing well with China. China's not easy, just like your home country is not easy, Dara. I think we're doing very well. They're over there now. I'm only getting good reports. It's a little early, but they'll be calling in soon. In fact, probably when I get back, I'll have my first call from them. We want to open up China. And if we don't open up China, maybe we won't do anything. But we want to open up China. It'll be a great thing for China, a great thing for the rest of the world.
And well, the thing is, the rare earth was supposed to pick up after the last meeting, and it didn't. And that's just it. They're holding it back. Why? Because we need it. And we're holding back stuff from them. We have to find a way to get rare earth mined and refined in America quickly or with an ally quickly. But in the meantime, we need it. And we made it clear for tech and military. Meanwhile, the Chinese exports to the U.S. are down to the lowest point since 2020, to down 35%. Chinese manufacturing fell into a contraction. So that means they have an unemployment problem, a youth unemployment problem. They got a housing problem, a slump that lasted over 5 years. The Chinese aren't consuming their own products, and now they're not working or getting raises. Here's Kevin Hassett on what they're up against and how the next trade deal could be India. Cut 36. Cut 30, excuse me.
The fact is that I think that we spent the last week and a half getting the China situation under control, including having calls with President Xi and President Trump, sending our top trade team to London to finalize that deal. And we've got a whole bunch of stuff that's teed up to go next, and India would be top of the list.
Yeah, and that would be great. And we keep hearing that. We heard 90 deals in 90 days, and obviously Peter Navarro doesn't know what he's talking about. He never did. So I don't think that and that's why he's been pulled back considerably. Look, he was loyal to the president, went to jail, but that doesn't mean you have to destroy the economy because of his theories he wrote in 1980. And by the way, he used to be a Democrat. Another Chinese scientist from Wuhan has been charged with smuggling illegal biological material into the U.S. This guy, Shengen Wen, 42. I used to work there, Ontario, California. It's halfway between Palm Springs and Los Angeles. He pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to violate the IEPA Act and one count of acting as an illegal agent of a foreign government. Wen has been in federal custody since the arrest back in 2024. Wen's a citizen of China who entered the United States on a student visa and remained here illegally. Also, one Chinese national pled guilty to acting on the direction of North Korea to export firearms, ammo, and technology to North Korea. Isn't that nice? Katie Hobbs looking to correct herself with one of the most horrendous decisions ever, and that is to veto a bill that would have banned China from buying farmland around military bases. Really? Now, yesterday, Governor Hobbs announced her proposal that would block adversarial nations act that will crack down on government of China, Russia, North Korea, and other foreign adversaries. The proposal would forbid China adversaries and foreign adversaries from owning land near Arizona's military bases. You had that bill on your desk. No one ever thought she was that bright. I don't know how Carrie Lake lost to her, but for you to veto that as a Democrat in a moderate state that's going more and more Republican is idiotic. And lastly, internationally, Iran. I'm so happy the president's understanding that what would cost me able to do is almost nothing with Iran. The Grand Ayatollah says we will never accept no centrifuges and no enrichment in country. He said that. What else are you talking about? Yesterday, Trump said the Iran appeared to have rejected a key element of the American proposal. Trump told reporters that Tehran wants to continue enriching on its own soil after the U.S. proposed an arrangement. What else are we talking about? Well, yesterday, he picked up the phone and he talked to Netanyahu. What do you think they're talking about? Listen, it's frustrating to Netanyahu. He destroyed their missile defenses. He's lined up and swarmed portions of their nuclear program. He knows exactly where everything is. And now we're stopped. We're stopped with the change in administrations as they destroy the rest of Hamas, keep Hezbollah flat on its back, and no longer consider Syria an enemy while taking shots at any forces that take aims at them. So as dire as things looked, it is looking somewhat better. Here's President Trump. And by the way, when you talk about a positive call in Netanyahu, they're not talking about the economy or trade. Cut 40.
Yeah, we discussed a lot of things and it went very well. Very smooth. We'll see what happens. You know, we're trying to do something with a country we just spoke about, Iran. But we're trying to make a deal so that there's no destruction and death. And we've told him that, and I've told him that, and I hope that's the way it works out. But it might not work out that way. We'll soon find out.
Look, we don't trust them. If they say we're not going to enrich, we'll do it outside the country. You release sanctions. What do they do with the money? The Houthis, Hamas, and Hezbollah. Come on. So that's what I'm saying. Nobody wants war. But with this current situation is we're putting off a war in which our enemies all have nuclear weapons. Remember, North Korea wasn't going to get a nuclear weapon. They have a nuclear weapon. Russia's got the biggest nuclear arsenal in the world, and I think China and us, I don't know exactly what China has, but they're building a brand new one. Ours needs to be modernized, and we all three of us don't think we're ever going to use any of this because it would just blow up the planet. But why would we give these renegade radical nations that same ability? We're not going to do it. So, and by the way, even Fareed Zakaria said President Trump's decision, it's not without risk, to quickly say, I'm going to get rid of the sanctions on Syria and give them a chance because the whole thing could fall apart. He said, normally with other administrations, it would have been studies and there would have been reports and there would have been interviews and it would have taken forever. One of the quotes was, if I could paraphrase, one thing really good about Trump, he makes quick, rapid decisions and he's not afraid to make hard ones. Wow. Can you believe that on CNN? All right, when we come back, I'm going to do a simulcast with Stuart Varney. At the top of the hour, I do Outnumbered, and always, history, liberty, and lefts. I can't believe Dayton, Ohio, WHIO listeners, we're a week away, and then that's going to be on the 21st. I'll be streaming on Fox Nation. And then don't forget, on the 23rd of August, going to be huge venue over in Texas. So many VIP tickets are going, but let's make sure we sell 2,000. And then Richmond, Virginia, big venue of over 1,200 tickets. I hope everyone could join us out there. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you are.
Now the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
On the back end of this, I'll be able to get some phone calls. You know how it works. Go on Stuart Varney, the top-rated show, him and Larry Kudlow on Fox Business Network, and that's the biggest in Fox Business News. So we're going to talk about everything. It's all on tap, and we're going to be coming your in a matter of moments. Also, I think it's important to tell you that we're not just covering the major stories over the Los Angeles riots. We're also covering the testimony with Pete Hegseth. And now that he's there and he's supposed to be talking about the budget, and man, is it important because he needs the $1 trillion, which is another $144 billion in addition to what they had last year. But they're also going to talk about the 700 Marines is going to be deployed. They're also going to talk about the Signal app. They're also going to talk about Pete not showing up to the NATO summit day one, where they talked just about supplying Ukraine with weapons and the repurposing of the missile defense technology to U.S. forces.
10:51, time for Brian Kilmeade. All right, Brian, I want you to take a look at this, please. Washington Post media critic Eric Wemple admitted his own failures in covering up Biden's mental decline, especially after Biden's infamous Where's Jackie gaffe. Brian, I can see you chomping at the bit on this one. Have at it, please.
Well, you know, he goes on to say in the story that other people on the left still are admitting that, you might say, would you and I have figured out what Jake Tapper's cashing in on and ignored what almost everybody has come out and said, including the number two doctor watching Joe Biden, that to calling out the doctor that didn't do the test necessary to find out if he was actually all there. So Eric Wemple says, hey, I had a problem. I admit it. At least he's not cashing in on it. As a media critic, he's calling himself out. But in the story, it goes on to say the rest of the media is not. I had Joe Manchin on this show about an hour ago, and he said that we were all shocked by the debate. We noticed he lost the killer instinct, but we didn't think anything of it in terms of he could not do the job. Now, I don't think that Joe Manchin's being is lying to me. But again, that's a situation where, you know, we didn't talk about JFK's tryst until after he was assassinated. Nobody was talking about it at the time. But now that he's out of office, I did expect more Democrats to come forward and say, man, he would zone out and stare into air when I was addressing him. I watched him at a cabinet meeting. It was embarrassing.
Yeah. Eric Wemple is no friend of Fox, I believe. Next one, Brian. Stephen A. Smith is warning California Governor Newsom over his handling of the L.A. riots. Watch this.
This is a guy that's leaving the gubernatorial seat in California. People are looking at him as a presidential candidate in 2028. This ain't going to win it for him. This ain't the issue for him to fall on his sword over, in my opinion. Nevertheless, he seems hell-bent on doing so. I don't know if he can win this issue. I don't know if Gavin Newsom has won any issue lately.
Brian, does Newsom have any hope left of being the Democrat candidate in 2028?
I'll put it this way. If you just look at his resume, terrible mayor, gave us the homelessness in a city of San Francisco, a god-awful governor who destroyed everything with the lockdowns during the pandemic. He destroyed the energy sector. Gas is $6 a gallon between the taxes and the fees and the refineries that he shut down and the oil drilling that he stopped. And then he said, I'm going to solve homelessness. All he did was become a breeding ground from homelessness, which he now admits. And you see him not taking a courageous stand with trans men playing in women's sports. Then he has a chance to show how he could rally in almost a military-style faction to rebuild the Pacific Palisades in Altadena. Almost nothing's done, Stuart. We all know people in Los Angeles. Nothing is done. Insurance is not complete. The water issue hasn't been solved. The FDNY has, the LA and the firefighters over in Los Angeles have not been bolstered. Nothing's been done. And now he sits on the sidelines and a president has to come in and restore law and order to his city. And he blames the president for bringing too much law and order to his city. Please, if there's anyone not worthy of a promotion, it's this guy.
We just had Jonathan Hunt reporting from Los Angeles, who says the situation has calmed down. I would interpret that as meaning that the National Guard did its job, just as President Trump wanted them to do. Brian Kilmeade, great stuff, and we appreciate it. We'll see you again real soon.
Go get him, Stuart Varney. Thank you. Sandra, you're over in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Brian, you know, I want to just tell you what I was thinking. I was thinking that I hope the riots don't come to New York. I don't want that to happen, but I think it might. And I'm thinking that Eric Adams said, should it happen here, he's going to handle it. So I'm thinking this is a chance for him to show strength, unlike Karen Bass. And maybe that might help him in the election, because I certainly don't want Cuomo. I would like Curtis Lee a first choice, but my second choice is Eric Adam because he's on Trump's team. So what do you think?
The Ms. Mamdani guy, the fact that he is surging makes me feel as though New York has learned nothing. An anti-Semitic, anti-capitalist surging in New York City after we got the lazy communist de Blasio destroy a city that was run for four straight terms by Giuliani and Bloomberg for three. That's five straight. Five straight terms. He's been totally straightened out. And that the New York would even entertain bringing back someone as inept as that is nuts. And now Cuomo is basically, they say in ranked choice voting, when they come around to the next round after the initial one, a win by seven, he'll be up by two. Up by two! Can you believe it? That's how sick people are of a sexually assault accused by 11 separate women. He's been charged. So do I think Eric Adams potentially could be better than them? Yes. But I got to see a little bit more execution on his policies. And I do think that Curtis is the one built for success and understands the city, that maybe in a general, they all eat each other's young, and then the Republican emerges. If he can have a even a more effective campaign, that would be interesting for sure. So we'll see. And Stephen A. Smith was also on The Daily Show yesterday. I think on many levels, even though Charles Barkley says don't take him serious, I think he does think he's running for president. I don't think there's any doubt about it. All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you are. Don't forget One Nation Sundays at 10 p.m. and listen to Fox and Friends every day, 6 to 9. Keep it here. And at the top of the hour, I'm on Outnumbered. Of the next hour, that is. That's 12 o'clock Eastern.
News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. We've got a big hour coming your way. Senator John Husted, the Small Business Health and Education Committee member who's representing Ohio. As you know, he replaced J.D. Vance. We'll see what happens on the reelection. And we also are watching the testimony of Pete Hegseth, first one since his confirmation hearing. And, you know, instead of talking about the budget, which I don't think he fully submitted yet, but I think he needs to find out how much. It's the first one. They're going to bring up the Signal app, and they're going to bring up the 700 Marines, and we'll see what happens. I would like to know the details on the budget and modernizing our fighting force in light of the way everything is drones these days. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
And President Trump, being President Trump and a New Yorker, basically said, I want to meet again, you know, in the next few days, and I want a handshake that you promise you're going to release these things. And so really, the purpose of the meeting today is to make sure that they're serious.
Yeah, how about that, Kevin Hassett? Trust and expect them to cheat, but you got to get China and the U.S. deal done, especially when it comes to rare earth. And they need a lot of technology that we have, as well as the American consumer. Our imports on Chinese goods are down 35%, and it is devastating them.
Number two.
On Elon Musk, do you plan to speak to him on the phone anytime soon?
I haven't really thought about it, actually. I would imagine he wants to speak to me. I would think so.
We'll see.
If I were him, I'd want to speak to me.
Yep, Musk versus Trump. The Cold War begins to thaw. We'll discuss.
Number one.
Are Democrats out of touch on this issue?
Well, I think if you did the polling in Los Angeles, I'm not sure it would be that way, considering we are a city of immigrants. But do people really approve the federal government coming in and seizing power?
The federal government has to seize power because someone had to bring, in my view, that city under control. L.A. riots day four and counting. Marines are about to join the National Guard. Some L.A. cops are working hard to suppress some of the violence against ICE, even though they're told they're not going to be able to work with them. Because of sanctuary city policies, American people got a clear distinction. What do you want, the permission for illegal immigrants to just reign in cities? Or do you want people to crack down in some cooperation? Or are you glad that when illegal immigrant criminals are ripped out and put in jail and thrown out of the country, does that please you or does that depress you? Andrew McCarthy joins us now, Fox News contributor, former U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, best-selling author. Andy, what about the president's constitutional authority to put National Guard in without the governor's permission? Is he covered?
He's completely covered, Brian. There's no doubt that the president has the authority. In fact, in the Civil War era, the Supreme Court said the president had not only the authority, but the duty to protect the United States against incipient, potentially violent rebellion. And there's no doubt that the president has the authority to protect legitimate constitutional functions of the federal government, federal personnel, and federal facilities. I've actually been, you know, one of the people over the years who said that the states, when the Constitution was adopted, had supremacy in the enforcement of who got to be in their territory and who didn't, and that it was the federal government's role that was dubious. But the fact of the matter is, over the last century, the courts have found that there is not only a federal role in immigration enforcement, but that the federal government is supreme. It's got plenary power over immigration enforcement. Whether you think that's a good development or a bad development, that ship has sailed. It's just that's the way it is. It's a federal function, and the president gets to execute it and protect it.
How many days?
For how many days?
Is it 60 days? No.
There's no limits on it. There are two sources of authority that he has. So there is some statutory authority, but he's got constitutional authority, even if there were no statutes, to do whatever he has to do to protect the United States and to protect the legitimate functions of the federal government.
So why is it a big decision for him on whether to use the Insurrection Act driven by executive power? Like, why is that a problem? Or technically, did he do that already?
No, he didn't invoke the Insurrection Act. He invoked a different provision of Title 10, which allowed him to call up National Guards. But he also deployed, active Marine forces as well, which don't come under in any way state control. And the issue with the state National Guard is that they ordinarily work for the state, but the commander in chief is allowed to call them into federal service. The governor should be consulted on that, but the governor doesn't get a veto on it. It's the president's call.
So we're looking now at the Marines standing by from Palm Springs. I'm not sure exactly the division, but not from Pendleton, but 700 standing by. What would have to happen? What would have to happen to allow our fighting force to deploy in the city?
They'd have to be. They simply have to be ordered by their commanders to do so. I think the issue, Brian, isn't so much with their presence. The issue with respect to what, you know, the president has to be doing, Secretary of Defense Hegseth has to be doing, is being very clear on what the rules of engagement are and what their mission is. What obviously you don't want to have happen is the possibility of a Kent State type tragic mistake that ends up in, instead of supporting civil order, ends up exacerbating the situation. That's the thing that they want to avoid.
So what is rules of engagement, do you think? They're watching federal buildings now, but they're not necessarily breaking up riots, walking in the street, clearing up the 101 freeway.
Right. I think that they're going to avoid use of lethal force. Obviously, that's going to be something that, as it is with police officers, that you only resort to in the most dire of circumstances. Otherwise, their job is defensive and protection. But on the other hand, if it turns out that the demonstrators and the rioters and the people who are causing all the problems there, if they clog up major arteries or make it otherwise impossible to have civil life in Los Angeles, and particularly for federal government functions to be lawfully carried out, they're going to take measures that are necessary to remove those obstructions.
We're going to see what's going to happen in the next few days and see if things calm down. But the one thing that just drives me crazy, and it just seems so un-American, is that when the LAPD police chief came out and said, I just want to assure the people of Los Angeles, we are not working with ICE and we will not be coordinating with ICE. Feel secure coming up to us, regardless of your immigration status, to tell us about crime in your area. I mean, that is the genesis of where things went off the rails, why ICE felt as though they were compelled, that they were about to be overwhelmed, and it took 35 minutes for the LAPD to respond. That is like a family not speaking to each other. Law enforcement have this symbiosis that even if you're in a different city, they just seem to have this special gene where they look out for each other. This doesn't seem like something that should exist in America.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are periodically throughout our history, there are these third rail issues where the country is divided. I saw Matt Continetti had a great column about this in the Free Press today, I think. But, you know, in the 19th century, it was slavery. Before that, there were other economic issues that divided the North and the South. So ordinarily, law enforcement people are going to be law enforcement people, and they're going to be for upholding the law wherever that occurs. Today, our third rail issue is immigration enforcement. It's kind of it's a deep conviction in blue cities and states that the United States shouldn't have borders and that anybody is welcome to come. I think most of the people in the United States and now the people who are running the federal government believe that we have these immigration laws and they have to be enforced, and that the illegal immigration and the collapse of the border security has left a mess of a situation that has to be addressed. But the thing is, the people who put in these sanctuary policies in places like Los Angeles, they didn't spontaneously appear. They got elected by the people of Los Angeles. So the fact is that in some places in the United States, they don't feel the same way about immigration enforcement as you do and I do, and I think probably 70% of the country does.
So I got to ask you this. It's kind of a general question, but the big push right now is to reexamine international students and put a hold on them when it comes to higher education. We find out that 27% of all the students at Harvard are foreign students. President says that seems too high. I'm worried about it. I'm going to ban foreign students. So they're going to, Harvard's going to go to court. But it's creating a sense of unrest on a lot of college campuses and an examination of what exactly they're doing here, knowing that the Chinese have this history of spying specifically. What legal grounds is the president standing on now? Or do you think that the schools have the upper hand?
As long as the federal government doesn't engage in constitutionally questionable things like viewpoint discrimination, for example, or violations of equal protection of law, the federal government has plenary authority over immigration, which means if they don't want to allow any foreign students to come in, they don't have to let any foreign students come in. That authority actually comes from Congress. This is not, you know, the president sometimes talks about this as if Article 2 of the Constitution gives him this sweeping authority. Actually, the sweeping authority belongs to Congress. But by statute, it's given very expansive authority to the president. And as long, again, as he treats Harvard like he treats everyone else, or if he doesn't treat Harvard like he treats everyone else, he has a good, valid reason for making distinctions. As long as he doesn't engage in viewpoint discrimination or not enforce the law equally, he's on very strong footing.
But Andy, what if they come back and say, hey, these are private, beside the state schools, these are private institutions. All right, leave me alone. I'm Harvard. I'm not Penn State. I'm Long Island University. I'm Hofstra. I'm independent. Don't tell me what I could do.
I think, Brian, that's true with respect to a lot of domestic business decision making. But if you're a foreign person and you want to come into the United States, you need the government's permission. Gotcha. Harvard's permission doesn't do it for you.
Understood. The whole battle and this fighting out. The other thing is about possibly the most consequential question I've asked you so far that affects all our economy is the push to make this lawsuit by small business that the president overstepped his tariff authority and a trade court deciding that he did and now putting the decision on hold. But the minute that trade court decided he did, they lost, I happen to know directly, a lot of leverage with the EU and other countries as we try to restructure our trade relationships because they say, hey, you can't do that. You've overstepped your presidential authority. I don't really have to deal with you. So who's right in this case? Because I understand they want the Supreme Court to see it right away.
Yeah, I thought the trade court's opinion was correct. I don't think the president has the authority under the international Enemy Economic Powers Act, IEPA. There are laws on the books that give the president a lot of tariff authority, but there are a lot of hoops that he has to jump through to comply with those laws. He was trying to do it just the same way he's trying to do with immigration by invoking the Alien Enemies Act. By invoking this law, which doesn't even mention tariffs in it, he was trying to claim sweeping authority to basically set the tariff levels unilaterally on his own without any input from Congress. And the court said that this statute was not meant to convey that kind of authority to the president. So, you know, whether it affects his leverage or not is another story. But if he's invoking authority that he doesn't actually have and that hurts his negotiating position, you shouldn't arrange a negotiating or strategize a negotiating position out of authority that you don't have.
What strategy do you use the first time around that wasn't challenged, but he decided to go a different way this way in his first term?
Well, and he has a lot of authority under a variety of statutes with respect to tariffs. But I think in the first term also there was more input from Congress. And in particular, I think that was the case with the Mexican and Canadian deal, which had a lot of back and forth between the administration
USMCA.
And Congress.
Yeah,
here he's trying to go it alone. And that's always tough to do, especially nowadays, because the Supreme Court, they always talk about what Justice Scalia used to say, which is that Congress doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes. In other words, if you're going to exercise or invoke sweeping power, you have to show in the statute that Congress gave you that power, that there's some.
But Andy, correct me here, but what happened the first time when he just said to China, hey, I'm going to up your tariff rate, and he put those tariffs on and Biden left them there? That wasn't challenged.
Yeah, well, this time it's being challenged, Brian, but he did it in a much more sweeping way this time than he did the last time. And this time it's global. And what you have to cite to trigger a lot of these laws is an actual emergency. What he has said this time around was that trade imbalances are an emergency. If you speak to a lot of economists, particularly conservative economists, they don't think trade balances are a problem at all, because if you have a trade deficit, that means you have an investment surplus. They have to sort of cancel each other out. So there's a lot of debate even among economists about whether this is a problem at all. But the thought that it's such an emergent situation that it has to be dealt with and the president has to assert unilateral power to impose global tariffs is a very controversial assertion.
I know. They were saying more the debt and deficit than trade deficit imbalance as it plays into the deficit, which they say is an emergency, but we'll see. I tell you what, always great to have you on, Andy. Andy McCarthy, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. When we come back, I'll take some calls. In the bottom of the hour, we talk to the new senator from Ohio. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's quite revealing about some of his childhood experiences. The fact that he was tested, he had aptitude testing when he was a child because his parents were worried that he was so rambunctious. The results came back, Donald Trump said, not to his father's liking, because it turns out that Donald Trump is a literal musical genius. He can pick notes and remember them for an hour and be able to regurgitate them back. So that explains why he's just so interested in the music. He chooses every song for his rallies. If you go to one of his properties, he has an iPad out and he's playing DJ. He loves Elton John. He loves Cats and all the Broadway musicals.
Right. He does like to DJ. Am I correct? That was Miranda Devine in her brand new podcast. I did not know Trump was a musical genius.
A literal musical genius.
I mean, you would think he'd play one instrument. Do we know if he plays one instrument?
I was going to say, we don't know if he does play it or not, but we do know he does have a mean dance to the YMCA.
You know what? It's bold and it's brash and it's fearless.
Very fearless. It's like he gives no cares.
All right. More on Donald Trump's musical genius in a moment. That's something else Bob Costas would not agree to.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Everything that's happened in the last 7 days between the fight with Elon Musk and now the deployment of the National Guard is probably also a distraction from the main story, which is that right now Donald Trump is trying to pass probably the most unpopular piece of legislation that he will attempt to move through Congress in his first term. He's going to throw 15 million people off their health care in order to fund a massive tax cut for the wealthy. It's going to add $2 trillion to our deficit. We're probably going to head into a recession. And so I do also think he's probably doing everything he can to try to get the entire political world to be talking about anything other than a piece of legislation that's going to fundamentally change this country.
Okay, a couple of things. I've never seen such crazy takes. I mean, look at Rachel Maddow. I don't agree with her, but sometimes you go, okay, I see where she's coming from, even if you don't agree with her. And then I'm listening to Senator Murphy. Is he out of his mind? The president wants to talk about the big, beautiful bill all day. He didn't want to talk about Elon Musk talking about it. You're onto something. Do you think that he wanted to put National Guard troops into Houston to pass the big, beautiful bill? One thing has nothing to do with the other. And it's not a tax cut for billionaires. Last time. mean, what are you talking about? Now you're concerned about the deficit. Nobody thinks a Democrat's ever concerned about the deficit. So you don't have any credibility there. Senator John Husted joins us now of Ohio. Senator, welcome back. Your thoughts about your colleague Chris Murphy's take on what Trump's up to?
Well, that's a delusional take on reality, because the big, beautiful bill provides tax relief for working families and small businesses across this country. For the average family of four that makes $80,000 a year, if we don't get this done, it'll be a $1,700 increase on them. So, of course, we want to talk about how we're fighting for pro-family, pro-business policy that will help grow the economy and put people to work.
Well, do you think that President Trump doesn't want to talk about that? I mean, what is he – what Democrat thinks the president doesn't want to talk about his signature piece of legislation? I think we just banged out of it for a second. We'll just get him right back. But I'm going to play a little bit more about some of the economic messages that the president wants out. Do you think he doesn't want to talk about Iran? He started to talk about it yesterday. Also, just think about this. If you're the president of the United States and you don't want to talk about something, you don't have press conferences. You don't have meetings with investors where you say, let me open up the floor. You don't meet with the German chancellor and say, anybody have any questions? At the day that Elon Musk has a meltdown. I just don't understand, Senator, why they think the president would not want to talk about this.
He does want to talk about it. And you're absolutely right. He's been distracted, frankly, by the inability of the governor of California and the mayor of Los Angeles to control the illegal criminals. I mean, look, this is the problem for the Democrats. They're siding with the criminals over law-abiding citizens. They're siding with illegal aliens over citizens. They're siding with vandals over the small businesses they vandalize. They side with the anti-Semites over innocent Americans. They raise taxes on families rather than fighting for families. They're for transgender men in sports rather than women and girls, giving them a fair. They're representing the radicals and not the reasonable people of America. And I want to tell you something. President Trump wants to talk about all those things, but he also wants to talk about the bill that is going to be a signature part of his presidency that will get the American economy moving forward and provide tax relief for working people.
Now, what could you tell us about what the Senate's focused, even if it's not you, Senator, but what the Senate's been focused on changing about the House bill? Number one, I see a lot of people like Senator Rick Scott and the Senator from Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, come out and say, I'm not for this whole SALT. Allowing state and local states, these blue states, to be able to write off the state taxes. I'm not for that. Also, I hear that they want to visit Medicare. They feel as though you can do something with that entitlement. Trump has said, I really don't want you doing that. What are you hearing, or what are you doing?
So look, this is the process. The process is that we should push ourselves to be as fiscally responsible as we can. Yes, the SALT tax relief is primarily benefits blue states, but we also recognize that Speaker Johnson and the House have to get the votes, so we have to find a reasonable compromise there. On Medicaid, frankly, it's just explaining to people that we want to save the program for poor children, the elderly, people with disabilities, but to do that, we have to reform it and get savings out of it. What are the things that we want to do there? Well, let's stop paying for illegal immigrants on the program. That will save the American taxpayers money. Let's take these people who are able-bodied, childless adults and ask them to work in return for their benefits. That is not an unreasonable thing to ask. And guess what? When we do that, they'll have a job. Then perhaps they'll get health care from their employer rather than from the government, and their lives will be better, and it will cost the taxpayers less. So it's just refining these issues as the bill moves through the Senate that we have to get done. We're going to get it done. But look, it's okay to push ourselves to be as fiscally responsible as we possibly can before we get a vote on it.
So what do you hear as we look it over to China and find out what's going on in London? Doug Burgum weighed in on what we need to happen, and the rare earth is an issue. Cut 31.
The central focus of these discussions has to be on something that we've been talking about for a couple of years, which is that China has, going back almost three decades, had a very strategic long-term strategy of cornering the market for critical and rare earth minerals. And in process of doing it, it's not just a U.S.-China problem. It's China versus the world. They're controlling over 85% of the processing.
How do we attack that, Senator? I mean, we have rare earth. We don't want to mine because of environmentalists and other reasons. We don't make it cost-effective, I guess, to enrich. So have you guys talked about this being a national security issue?
It is an economic and national security issue. There is no doubt China has leveraged with America on this issue, because we have allowed some of the elements that are essential to our economic and national security, like rare earth minerals, magnets that are used for a lot of the work that we do in automobiles and other things. That's all made in China now, and we have to reshore that. But they presently have leverage on this, and that's why we've got to re-domesticate that supply chain. But it's not something in this particular area that you can do quickly. But we need to press forward with all haste to get it done, and eliminating the regulatory burden that is literally takes 10 years to set up some of these refining operations. That has to be changed. So America needs to get out of America's way here.
What do you think? I mean, I know you want to trim this bill down a little bit, but I think people should understand, too, with the regulation decreases and the energy increases for nuclear as well as oil and gas. I mean, this could be, even though I guess the oil industry doesn't love drilling if it's just $60 a barrel, this could be revolutionary in terms of what we can export in terms of natural gas especially, right?
Well, absolutely. We want to have energy independence. That is part of economic and national security. We need to be able to produce enough energy to serve America's needs. And in certain circumstances, if we can export it to particularly our friends and allies, we should do that. It's good for American business. It's good for the economy. But we also need to lean in on this regulatory side. Remember, a lower cost of oil is bad for the businesses in terms of the money they make. However, it's good for the consumer. It drives down inflation. It drives down the cost of input, everything from the food you eat to the things that we manufacture. So lower prices are good for attacking inflation. But if we can get the regulatory burden out of the way and lower the cost of business, they can also be successful. And we need to do that across the board. And particularly, we need to lean in on nuclear, because if we want to lead in AI, we're going to need enough energy to do that. And AI requires a lot of electricity.
I think the Democrats seem to be open to nuclear. Am I dreaming?
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm going to get a Democrat lead sponsor on some regulatory reform on the nuclear issue this week. I'm hoping to bring some of them along, because if they believe, which I don't believe, but they believe that climate change is an existential threat. Well, if you believe that and you want to lead in AI and you want to make things in America, you're going to need energy to do this. And you're going to have to lean into nuclear if you're them. So I hope that the Democrats will join us in supporting a lot of these measures.
Lastly, on education, the President of the United States taking on Harvard. It's kind of moved to the back pages this week, but he's not backing off on their aid, their grants, and the ability to admit foreign students. And it's not just going to the big Ivy Leagues, it's going to others. As a member of the Education Committee, where do you stand?
Well, I think the president makes a very good point. We've had a lot of our most elite institutions invite people to study and learn on their campuses that are really harmful to American interests. We've seen a lot of anti-Semitism come out of those areas. We've seen attempts for some of the Chinese students to steal intellectual property. They're not a very pro-American environment there on a lot of those campuses, and they need to be accounted for. And I hope that the universities will work with the administration on listening to what they're trying to accomplish here. But I think that the president is leaning in here, and the universities better pay attention.
Guess we'll see what happens. Senator, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
St. John Husted of Ohio. Gary in Daytona. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. The last couple of days, it was amazing when I heard, and it reminded me of Governor Waltz's wife, when I've heard now three times people saying it. This all started out with people just setting cars on fire and enjoying and watching them burn. And I remember how excited she got when things were on fire. And the second thing is, the people that are protesting, there's a whole subset of people that this now allows them to loot. They're not interested in protesting at all. They're interested in looting and destroying property. So while there's people out there protesting, throwing rocks and burning things, You have, I've watched the coverage, especially on Fox, the people going in stores looting. They're not interested in, they could care less about ICE. They're interested in stealing and destroying.
Thank you. Jimmy in Holly Springs, North Carolina. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, good morning, sir. I appreciate you taking my call. I wanted to comment on Ms. Karen Bass's comments about two things. One, if California and her city would work in concert with ICE, then these raids, quote unquote, would not occur because they would be detained and held for them to pick up peacefully. I mean, that's a no-brainer. And secondly, her comment about the federal government, you know, usurping the state's authority by sending in the National Guard and like, well, I recall during the immigration crisis that Texas put up razor wire to stop the flow of illegal immigrants, and federal government under Mr. Biden sued them to make them take it down. So where was she when her fellow state was being usurped by federal government?
I hear you. Great point. Kevin in Atlanta. Kevin.
Hey, Brian. Question for you. If illegal immigrants would be eliminated from the census, do you think that the sanctuary states, the blue states, would kind of get off their high horse on trying to make this the number one issue in the country right now?
Great question, because, of course, you get more congressional seats if you have more population, and that might show an advantage in the House. I get it. That would be really interesting. Then it would come down to how are they helping in terms of jobs? Would there be a big push and no longer standing in the way of massive immigration reform? That would be a great question. One of the big obstacles has been solved. I can't believe I'm saying this, but everyone said you can't get anywhere until the border is closed. I really think we've basically closed the border, getting like 35 people a week. So the next question would be, what if those people didn't count in blue states? And if you could say that don't count in the census unless you're a citizen, man, suddenly everyone would come to the table. That's a great point, Kevin. Thanks so much for bringing that up. Okay, I appreciate the call. So at the top of the hour, I'm going to go on Outnumbered. When we come back next, we're going to find out if there's more to know. We're going to have some fun there. And also, keep in mind, too, History, Liberty, and Laughs, back in action Saturday night. WHIO listeners especially, Dayton, Ohio. Some balcony seats left, some VIP opportunities remain. Make sure I see you there in person. Also, we expect to be streamed on Fox Nation. There'll be specials for you if you show up, or getting Fox Nation, which is really cool. They have that whole thing, the surge of Donald Trump right now, which is a great series.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Luckily, in the midst of all this chaos, there have been no fatalities. Well, human fatalities.
Self-driving car company Waymo said it was suspending service after at least five of its cars were vandalized and set on fire.
Took five of them before you were like, should we stop sending the Waymos? You think they're just sitting around? You know, four could be a coincidence, but it was no coincidence.
It is believed that those Waymos were summoned or booked by the protesters with the intention of then getting them to the location and torching them.
My God, how dare you? How could you use Waymo's innocence and helpful spirit against the Waymo? Imagine for a moment Waymo's disappointment upon realizing it was, as Admiral Akbar might say, a trap. You got Waymo going, hello, it is my honor to take you to Hollywood and what are you doing? My God, no! I'm giving you only one star! No! Tell my Roomba I love her!
Pretty funny. I mean, it is kind of crazy. Just show the idiocy of blowing up a robocar. Which, by the way, I didn't even know it was existing. Do you?
I did know they existed. I didn't know they were used so prominently in L.A. I also think if they weren't called Waymos, it would not be as funny.
I know, that's true. Let's find out if there's even more to know. Sly Stone, the visionary funk frontman. I'm allowed to say that, funk frontman.
As long as you say it properly.
For the family, yes. Snow has died at the age of 82. He was eccentric. He died on June 9th in Los Angeles. He was born Sylvester Stewart. Here's the quote. After a prolonged battle with COPD and other underlying health conditions, he passed away peacefully, surrounded by his three children. Okay.
He was a uniter.
Next, pet peeves. A survey reveals life's biggest little things that drive people nuts. The survey reveals, here we go. Leading the charge at 46% is that dreaded mount of spotting a nemesis in public. You mean finally, like, what, that's number one pet peeve?
Really? No, isn't something like this one of yours?
Oh, that's the worst. I can't even hear it. Next, followed closely by the panic-inducing knock on your front door when you're decidedly not prepared for guests, 44%.
That's ridiculous. That's like a sign of the times that, heaven forbid, someone shows up at your house.
The third-place winner in the championship of minor chaos, people talking to you and you desperately want silence. 43% of respondents identified that as a major stress trigger. And then the next one is technology, unsurprisingly, plays a starring role in our modern anxiety symptom. 40% of Americans citing lagging Wi-Fi as a major stressor. 35% said unexpected phone calls, and their stress levels sends their stress levels soaring.
Unexpected phone calls is annoying. The Wi-Fi thing, I think you can understand, though. If you're someone you're expecting, like, you have a good Wi-Fi connection, you're expecting to be able to send things or, like, get information quickly, and you can't. I mean, it's not like a top trigger. It's just very frustrating.
Next, the judge dismissed Justin Baldoni's $400 million complaint against Blake Lively and her husband, Ryan Reynolds. The Baldoni production company, Wayfair Studios, sued Lively and her husband for defamation. He sought at least $400 million for damages. It also named his publicist, Leslie Sloan, as a defendant. Baldoni filed his lawsuit about 2 weeks after Lively sued him and others tied to the film, alleging harassment. Baldoni sued the New York Times for libel after he accused the newspaper working with Lively to smear him. The judge tossed the lawsuit, saying in court that Baldoni's legal team can amend the claims of torturous interference. Bottom line is, I hear the guy can't get a job now. So I guess Lively and Reynolds are more powerful.
Well, I mean, that is true.
All right. We'll see what happens. As I mentioned on the show, he is a sexy man.
Knox and Nation.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.